you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the IGO-INGO Access Security Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group call on the 14th of December, 2017. On the call today, we have Petter Reinfors, George Kiriakis, Zach Muskovich, Phil Corwin, Paul Tattersfield, Jay Chapman, and Nat Cohen. I have no listed apologies for today's meeting. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, Dennis Cheng, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Phil Corwin. Please begin.
Okay, thanks, Terry, and we're not going to take roll call. Any change in SOI? Didn't think so. All right, so item two, could people indicate by a green check how many were on Tuesday's call with the folks from Nominet, just so we know, and I should do that as well? Okay, so a little more than half the group that's on the phone. I don't want to dominate the conversation of what they said. What I would, you know, let me start the discussion, and we'll discuss that as long as folks want to, is that Nominet offers an appeal process, which is internal. I believe it's the same cost as the original filing, and the appellees might have to pay where they didn't pay the first time around. It's decided by their own internal experts under the same standards as the prior decision, and I forget the results of the outcome on that. There are some reversals, but I'm going to stop there and let other people chime in with what they thought was salient from the discussion. But since we had earlier discussed an arbitration of that type, and there didn't seem to be much support for it, and the arbitration option that's on the table, and option C would be under the an arbitration under three-member panel under the national law that the original judicial appeal was brought under. I'm not sure it's relevant, but if people want to, based on that presentation, want to say it's worth considering that type of arbitration option, this is your time to say so. I'm going to be quiet now and let anyone else speak up who wants to discuss the presentation. I see George's hand up and then Petter. So, George, you go first.
George Kiriakis for the transcript. I don't see it really as a viable option for a final determination because it suffers from many of the same problems of the UDRP or URS in that there's no discovery, there's no discovery of documents, there's no cross-examination, there's no oral hearing. In other words, it doesn't have any of the due process protections that exist in a court process. And also the panelists are, or the so-called experts, are the same usual suspects who normally represent trademark complainants as panelists, as opposed to the way judges work, who are truly independent and who are on salary and so on. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that, George. Petter, go ahead.
Yeah, just Petter here. Just some quick comments. Initially, it was, as I remember, the reply to my specific answer on that. Unfortunately, there were no cases involving IGOs. They referred to a couple of cases with INGOs. But we cannot. Get any specific guidelines on our topic involving IGOs when it comes to this process. But a couple of other things that I think was kind of interesting, it's, and this was this is of course related to UK and could be different in other countries, but when I refer to it sounds quite similar situation as in Scandinavia, at least, that the appeal process was indeed less expensive than a court action. Could be also because there was no physical meetings with the parties. It was treated on the papers. But what I also think was interesting to hear that could be useful when it comes to, in the future, discuss how to select, when now I refer to option C, how to select panelists and keep them updated, that they had a yearly updated an interview with the panelists. They were very strange to keep them updated on the topics, and they were all also very experienced on this kind of disputes. And what was also part of the nominate procedure was, of course, mediation that we had talked just briefly about. But and here is my own talking from my own personal experience with this kind of parts of this of domain dispute procedures that are used in at least when it comes to Scandinavia, Denmark, and Norway and Finland. Most of the cases are more, oh yes, we have to go through this mediation process, done, and then the parties proceed to the real dispute resolution procedure. So even if it's when it comes to more business agreement disputes, mediation is, I've talked from my personal view, mediation is a very, very good way to start try to solve the dispute instead of going directly to a court. When it comes to these kind of disputes, also talking about the time frame, and so I don't think mediation such is something to add to it. But in general, it was an interesting, very interesting presentation, and we got some, at least some examples of how arbitration can be used as a final way to solve disputes when it comes to domain names, instead of going to a court and also to not spend that much of time on the dispute resolution. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Peter, for those comments. I see in the chat room there's some discussion that mediation seemed to have some merits. I think, you know, this personal view, mediation requires two willing parties. I think that might be something that the large RPM review working group might want to look at when it gets to UDRP reform, that is encouragement of mediation prior to taking it to a panel. I think one of the issues there will be, is there a cost for that, that a professional mediator needs to be compensated in some way? And my understanding is the dispute providers make little, if any, profit now on providing the UDRP. So I think asking them to do that at no charge would be something that we'd have to look into, but I see that as an issue for the big group, not for this group. And Mr. Tatterfield, I see you just wrote, "This is ridiculous, Phil." I'm not sure what you're talking about. What is ridiculous? Are you referring to something I have said or done on this call?
Paul Tatterfield, for the record, sorry. The idea that we can't put mediation inject it into the process and we have to wait until the main working group to do so. I mean, it solves, according to Nominate, it solves 30% of their disputes. What we have here with options A, B, and C, we're talking about probably zero, perhaps one case ever. And we have a unique opportunity here to actually solve those problems, as I put in the proposal that I emailed you, working group.
Well, and Paul, your proposal will be, we have your proposal contained within the document we're going to go over it next, so there's no attempt. I was expressing a personal view, and your proposal for mediation will be one of the options before the full working group when we take consensus call.
Oh, thanks.
So there's no attempt to censor anyone or prevent an issue from being. I was simply expressing my personal view.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. Is there any more discussion of the Nominate appeals process? I'm not hearing any support for this group to consider that type of appeal as a option for the IGO immunity issue. So unless someone wants to speak to that, I would propose we move on to item 3 on the agenda, which is review of the text. It says proposed by Zach, but I believe we also have George's and Paul's proposals in this document. We appreciate that everyone complied with the deadline and got these proposals in writing. And what we're going to do now is just review these and primarily let the proposers confirm that this is the language that will be in the consensus call, which will be the language in boldface. Let me just ask staff, Mary or Steve, when we put out the consensus call, will all this background language be available in the call or in a separate document, or how is that or do we just have the boldface text, and then there's a place where the background discussion can be accessed by those who want more information? What's the usual practice on that, Mary? And I see your hand up.
Hi, Phil. This is Mary from staff, and Steve and Barry can supplement what I'm about to say or correct me. There is a sort of regular practice, but there isn't a mandatory prescribed form. So the idea being that for each PDP working group, you know, whatever the information is that would be best suited to the group as the members make their individual decisions on a consensus call. For purposes of the consensus call for this group, we would suggest that the rationale and context be provided for recommendations 1, 2, and 4. You'll recall that we did discuss some language that could go into the final report as the rationale. So the updated text for that can be sent out. With respect to this particular potential recommendation 3 and the various options, like I said, we would recommend that we can also send out the rationale and context. The one question that maybe we can come back to at the end of this discussion is whether you would like staff to adapt the language from, say, Zach's and Paul's emails into something that's is similar in style to what we have for the others, or we could send it out as is and then rewrite it for the final report. So hopefully that's helpful.
I'm a little confused. Mary, what are you proposing to have staff rewrite?
Apologies, Phil. I think that our main recommendation is that, yes, it will be helpful to have the additional rationale and context because not all working group members are on all our calls. But with respect to these specific new proposals from Zach, George, and Paul, to the extent that all of these are going out, our question for you and the working group members here is whether the rationale for these three proposals should simply be the language sent in as is, or should staff attempt to edit them somewhat?
Yeah, well, the full group can discuss this. This is just my personal reaction off the top of my head. Number one, if and we're going to discuss that at point four, if we poll the working group, I think the poll document where people indicate support or opposition should just have the boldface language. We don't want a 20-page polling document that all statements by proponents of particular options should be in a separate document that's sent out at the same time, so that any working group members who are not familiar with the arguments for or against a particular proposal can refer to that before making their choice. I think at this stage, I would not be in favor of staff rewriting this. I think these are statements in support by the proponents of these options, and we ought to let them be in here as put forward by the proponents, and then we'll see which of any of these options have significant support, and then if they do have support, we can work with the working group on the final language and the final report. If they don't have substantial support, consensus support, then proponents of them can insert their rationales for why they should have been adopted in a minority statement. So those are my personal thoughts off the top of my head. I welcome discussion of that. So let's see if there's any discussion on that process, which is basically proposing to put the final brief boldface text of the format in any polling document that we use and have all the background rationale and discussion in a separate document for reference of working group members. I see my co-chair has his hand up. Go ahead, Petter.
Yeah, Petter here. I just wanted to state when I saw the chat message from both Zach and George that even if we don't have the final version or the latest version on the screen, I mean, you're both on the call today, so it would be good to have a quick verbal update from both of you if there is some specific changes, so that we at least can hear them today. And then I said we will arrange for the right text in the documents the final if we decide upon that. Thanks.
Okay, and George, go ahead.
George Kourikos again for the transcript. With regards to process, it's unclear to me, at least, how the consensus voting should take place, because some of these options are, for example, not mutually exclusive, and some of them seem to me should be answered before others. Like, for example, if you look at Zach's proposal, it's saying refer recommendation 3 entirely to the RPM PDP. So it's not a matter of, like, if that option, for example, had the majority support, then it removes the need to consider options A, B, C, and number 6, which hasn't been given a letter yet. So it seems to me that some kind of phased voting where that question is decided first might be appropriate. Or in the alternative, Zach Muscovich had asked about ranked voting. That might be another way to accommodate these kinds of proposals, because they're not all mutually exclusive. Like option number 6, for example, it's unclear to me if that's going to go into option number C, whether you guys being Phil and Petter, who are the main backers of option C, consider that a friendly amendment to option C, or whether it's now going to have to be in a totally separate option D or E or F or whatever. So I'm a little bit concerned about how the process is going to be done going forward, and perhaps as a group we need to decide that before taking things to the final level. Thanks.
Well, George, let me say two things. One, after we review this document and ascertain that the boldface language is exactly as the proponents wish it to be, we're going to proceed to a discussion of the process that the co-chairs are going to be proposing. But let me correct you right now, and after we get to this, Mary is prepared to display the working group guidelines. You keep using the word voting, and the PDP working group guidelines specifically prohibit voting. They permit the use of polls to assist the chairs or co-chairs in determining whether consensus exists, but they specifically warn against any poll turning into a voting. So the use of the word voting is not applicable to the PDP process. It tries to work to get a consensus built, and if there is no consensus, we'll report that there's no consensus, but we do not take votes and we do not take ranked votes. In fact, we're specifically prohibited from doing so. So I just want to make that clear, and after we review this document and ascertain that the language is as the proponents want it to appear in any poll, if we wish to have a poll, that we will go on and discuss the guidelines and the process going forward. So with that, I'd like to return to this document, and since Zach is on the call, Zach, this language in boldface, if we do polling on options, is this exactly how you want this option to appear, is this final language?
Yes.
Okay. And I think we had extensive discussion of this general option last week without the specific language before this. Is there anything you wanted to add as justification for this to the discussion that took place last week and has taken place on the email since then?
Nothing at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Zach. So we have a final language of an option here, which is basically that the IGO immunity issue should not be decided by this working group, but should be decided in a broader context by the full RPM working group. So we next go on to the proposal from George, which I note on his chat. Yes, it's not a new concept, but this particular language is a concise summary of the concept. And again, it proposes that the text of both the UDRP and URS rules be modified so that if a domain name dispute is initiated by an IGO as a complainant and a registrant commences an in rem action in a court of mutual jurisdiction, the registrar shall treat that court action the same as if it was an in personam action brought directly against the IGO. So again, I'll ask George, is that the final language you wish to appear in any poll, and did you want to say anything further in support of it at this time beyond what's already been stated in past discussions and on the email list?
George Karikos again for the transcript. Yeah, that final text, I think, captures it exactly. Basically, all these options are addressing procedural quirks in the UDRP and the URS, and so to some extent, they can defer to Zach's option of referring them to the RPM PDP in the sense that, as a working group, we found all these procedural quirks in the context of studying IGOs. But really, these quirks are affecting the rights of registrants. They're, you know, they happen to be discovered in the cases of IGOs being complainants, but there are much deeper underlying causes that possibly are best addressed in the RPM PDP, because all of these solutions that we are proposing are actually to the benefit of registrants. And so to that extent, Zach's proposal might have priority in the sense of fixing the underlying root causes instead of just focusing on the symptoms that happen to arise when IGOs alone or complainants. As I mentioned before, the UK cause of action arises, has the exact same root cause as the immunity issue. And this option number six is really just addressing sloppy drafting by the UDRP and URS drafters who never contemplated that an in-rem action might be the appropriate strategy for a complainant. So that's my two cents on the topic. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for that, George. And as noted, the additional backup explanation right now, I think we'll probably... the bold face will be in any poll document if we go that way, and the all the separate options can have separate rationales and backup language in a separate document for the use of working group members as they consider that. So finally, we get to Paul Tattersfield's new proposal or proposals. And, Paul, I'm going to just... you're on the line. Let me just state a couple of things and then allow you to respond. And these are stated in the with the intent to just see if we can make this language a little more precise. Let me start here, Paul. Let me ask: do you intend? Do you want these three options to be presented as one combined option or as three separate options?
Paul Tattersfield, for the record. I'm not sure which would be the best way to proceed in that. My proposal was really for the combined one, but if you wanted to split them out, then I'm happy
with it. Well, no, I'm just trying to get your intent.
I think the ideal solution is that they should all be, well... I was trying to present a solution that would work for everybody, that would be acceptable to everybody, and it seemed that all the bits that I proposed would be something that most people could subscribe to. However, if people want to subscribe to individual parts of it, then I'm happy with that. I think possibly the best way would probably be to group all three together.
Okay. Well, let me make a couple of questions/comments. On mediation, right now it seems to be a proposal for the UDRP in general. We don't have charter authority to recommend broad changes to the UDRP, only IGO-specific changes. Would you be willing to amend that to, say, at no cost to the parties when an IGO is the complainant, so that it's within our charter? Otherwise, I think we have a problem in accommodating it.
Sorry, that isn't clear. Yes, that was what I intended.
Okay. So would staff note that it will read, we should arrange for the UDRP providers to provide mediation at no cost to the parties when an IGO is the complainant? That would be the first component of Paul's proposal, the amended version. I think the second point on arbitration is clear. I would just point out, to make sure that you want this in the mix, that this is essentially what the IGOs have been urging for 3 years, that they would go to arbitration. Well, it's not clear to me how this would work. Let me back up. There's a UDRP decision. Are you saying that if the IGO loses, they would take it to arbitration, or that if the complainant uses, they would have to go to arbitration rather than to a judicial resolution? Well, I don't know if you're trying to speak, but I'm not hearing anything.
Sorry, is that better?
Yes.
Right. What I'm saying is that the registrant should have the right to go to a judicial hearing, and he should have the right to go to arbitration. And we should bind the IGOs when they bring the UDRP complaint, so that they have to participate in that.
Okay. All right. Well, you can check your rationale to see if that's clearly stated. I haven't read it yet because this is brand new to me, but thank you for that further explanation. I would point out that option C does permit arbitration by mutual consent, but so that concept is somewhat encapsulated in option C as one part of it. And the third part, when an IGO refuses to take part in judicial arbitral proceedings, I think the language should be amended. Any prior UDRP determination should be quashed, or we could use the word vitiated. The one thing I'd point out is that under present UDRP rules, if a registrant appeals and the other party, a judicial appeal and the other party doesn't appear, generally the suit would be decided on a default basis for the plaintiff because the other party did not make an appearance, and that would do away with the prior UDRP decision. So to that extent, I think it's already consistent with current UDRP practice. To take part, did you mean not showing up at all, not making an appearance in court, or asserting immunity, which is the situation we've been addressing?
Both.
Okay, so let me propose that this be amended to read, and it's subject to your approval, where an IGO refuses to take part in a judicial proceeding or judicial arbitral proceedings, comma, or asserts or successfully asserts immunity in a judicial proceeding, comma, any prior UDRP determination would be quashed. Is that language acceptable to you? I just want to be precise with the language. It's a bit fuzzy in the original form.
Yes, that would be acceptable. Thank you.
Okay. And did you want to say anything further at this time in support of this new multi-part proposal?
No, other than I had some reasoning behind it, some rationale, and I didn't know whether that should be included at some point somewhere.
Okay. Well, thank you. We thank you for submitting this. I would note that in the rest of the document, we have the other options for Recommendation 3, which haven't changed. Option A, Option B, Option C, these are the same language that was pulled in our preliminary consensus call. And so this new, now we would have those original three options and these three additional options in addition to that in one combined document, and then there'll be a separate document with backup rationale for reference by working group members. So is there any further discussion of this, these new text of options? If not, we'll move on to point 4, which is talking about the path forward. Yeah, George, go ahead.
George Carricos again for the transcript. A week or two ago, I posted a document with regards to costs of arbitration and comparing those to specific situations where ICANN was involved and also where ICANN wasn't involved, various documents from the Internet describing how arbitration can be much more expensive than going to the court. And so I would just want to put those into the oral discussion to be on the record as reasons that folks should not be in support of option number C. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, I believe you previously stated those concerns, George, but we note them again. And in response to Zach's question, statement about shall be vitiated, Zach, I think, whether it's vitiated, quashed, set aside, which is in the parenthetical, I would rather stick with the language we've had for a long time than start wordsmithing now, so that we're putting the same option before the full working group on a final consensus call rather than changing it. I think everyone understands that the intent is that if the under option A is that the IGO succeeds in asserting immunity in a judicial forum, that the prior UDRP decision against the complainant would be set aside and would have no effect. It would not be acted upon by the registrar in terms of extinguishing or transfer the domain. So I think everyone knows what the concept is. I think we would lose more than we gain by changing words to a long-settled option at this point. That would be my view. Okay, so at this point, let's move on to item four, which is how to go on. And Mary, can you, you said you had the guidelines available. Can we go through them, because so everyone refamiliarizes herself with the point of the process we're approaching? And Mary, what, could you point out the most relevant portion of this is for our purposes at this point in our progress as a working group?
Certainly, Phil. This is Mary.
It's a long document.
Yes, it is. It's quite comprehensive, but to the extent we're talking about designating consensus levels and the use of polls and so forth, we believe the most relevant section for the moment would be section 3.6, which starts at the bottom of page 8 and goes on for the next two pages.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mary. I just want to make sure we were focused on the right thing. So let's go. I'm going to take us through this briefly, and then we can have discussion to make sure everyone understands. It starts out the chair, in this case it would be the co-chairs, will be responsible for designating each position. So that puts the responsibility on the co-chairs to, in the final report, to assign to each option before the working group at the end their view as to what the support or a lack of support is for each within the working group. The first one is full consensus. I think that's one where we have on, we'll see in the final polling, but I don't know if we have unanimous consensus, but we certainly, we have very high consensus for recommendations 1, 2, and 4. If anyone is against them at the end, then we will likely have consensus, which is defined as a position where only a small minority disagrees, but most agree. So my view at this point, and we'll see what the final consensus call yields, is that we, on recommendations 1, 2, and 4, we're likely to either have full consensus or consensus based on all discussion and indications up to now. The next level down is strong support but significant opposition, and I think that's where we're heading at best on recommendation 3. We'll see how things shake out in the final consensus call, and this is where most of the group supports a recommendation, but a significant number of those who do not support it. Let me ask staff, let me stop there. Mary, when the council gets a final report and there's a recommendation in it that has strong support but significant opposition, which is the level up from the next one, which is divergence or no consensus, do they tend to act on that and pass it on to the board or not, or is it on a case-by-case basis in your experience?
Thanks, Phil. This is Mary from staff, and actually staff was going to make that point if you and Peter didn't cover it, that while there is no rule saying that the council must only act on a certain type of designation, the council's consistent practice has been they typically vote only on those recommendations that have either full consensus or consensus. The rationale for that, obviously, is that since we're talking about multi-stakeholder consensus building, even where a recommendation or a proposal had strong support, the fact that there was significant opposition drops it below the consensus threshold. So while the council has the ability and the authority to vote on or even adopt that kind of recommendation, they have never done so. And just for further information, we had a similar discussion on this point in the prior IGO working group that preceded ours, because in that group, as some folks who are members of this group will recall, there were some proposals that did get strong support but significant opposition as well.
Okay. Well, let me make a personal statement here. It seems clear to me, and I'd be happy to be surprised, but it seems to me that when we do a consensus call on recommendation three, at best we're going to get strong support but significant opposition for perhaps one of the proposals on the table. I'm personally tremendously disappointed that after 3.5 years of work, we're not going to be able to pass on a consensus position to Council. I think it's going to strengthen those who are critics of the PDP working group process, but we've done our best, and so be it. But I think what members of this working group should keep in mind is that no matter where things come out on Recommendation 3, Council is, unless they break with all past precedent, is unlikely to forward any recommendation on Recommendation 3 on to the Board. And, of course, Recommendation 3 addresses the most critical issue that has hung us up for 3.5 years, which is what to do about IGO's claims of immunity. So I'm disappointed in that. And I'm concerned about what the ramifications will be when, particularly, what kind of reaction it will elicit from the GAC and the IGOs. But so be it. So it's unlikely that we're going to produce anything that the Council will act affirmatively on in regard to Recommendation 3. Continuing through the document, the next position down is divergence, referred to as no consensus, which is another possibility for Recommendation 3. And we'll see again how the consensus call goes, that there are many different points of view. And then minority view refers to a proposal where a small number of people support the recommendation. This can happen in response to consensus, strong support but significant opposition, or no consensus. So in any of those cases, basically anything but unanimity, any group can submit a minority view, and that minority view, without editing, it is the view of the signatories of the minority view, will be included in the final report as a narrative explanation of their opposition to any of the options, no matter what degree of support it received, so long as it did not receive unanimous support. Okay, the recommended method for discovering the consensus level designation should work as follows. After a group has discussed an issue long enough for all issues to have been raised, understood, and discussed, the chair or co-chairs make an evaluation of the designation and publish it for the group to review. So basically, we've had a lot of discussion. We've had extensive discussion of all these options, and once we do a consensus call, the co-chairs will share their view as to what the level of consensus is for each of the separate options for review by the group and discussion. Then after that discussion, we'll I note your hand, George, and we'll call on you when I'm done. After the group has discussed the chair's estimation, we'll reevaluate and, if necessary, publish an updated evaluation. That continues until the evaluation is accepted by the group. Now it says, and this is particularly relevant to what we're going to discuss next, in rare case, a chair may decide that the use of polls is reasonable. Some of the reasons might be, one, a decision needs to be made within a time frame that does not allow for the natural process of iteration and settling on a designation to occur. Next, it becomes obvious after several iterations it's not possible to arrive as a designation. This will happen most often when trying to discriminate between consensus and strong support but significant opposition, or between strong support but significant opposition and divergence. So, one, when we've got time pressure, of course we have no strict deadline, but we have been at this for 3.5 years, and it's hard to know what more could be said about any of these options. And the second one is more relevant when we're trying to get a better feel for where different members of the working group stand on particular options, so we can give an accurate description of the level of consensus or lack thereof. This is what I want to refer. The next sentence refers to the proposal for weighted voting. Care should be taken in using polls that they do not become votes. A liability with the use of polls is that in situations where there's divergence or strong opposition, there are often disagreements about the meaning of the poll questions or the poll results. There's an admonition against voting in this process. Votes are not permitted. Based upon the working group's needs, the chairs may direct working group participants that they do not have to have their name explicitly associated with any full consensus or consensus view position. However, in all other cases, and in those cases where a group member represents the minority viewpoint, their name must be explicitly linked, especially in those cases where polls were taken. Right now, let me preview a bit of the chair's thinking. It's our view that just in any final consensus call, just like in the original one, that the input to the chairs would be anonymous, and that working group members are free to go on the record with support or opposition to any or all of the various options considered by the working group. We don't want to discourage some people from taking part in the poll out of concern that they might be personally criticized based on how they go, however they go. Next, if a chartering organization wishes to deviate from a standard methodology for making decisions or empower the working group to decide its own decision-making methodology, it should be firmly stated in the charter. We have no such statement in our charter, and there's no plans by the co-chairs to seek an alternative means. Consensus call should always involve the entire working group and should take place on a designated mailing list. So I saw there were concerns the other day that this consensus call might take place on a call. That's not our intent. It's not permitted by the guidelines. We're going to take a consensus call over a multi-week period by email, so that every working group member is aware of the consensus call and has equal opportunity to participate in. Okay, it's the role of the chairs, in this case co-chairs, to designate which level of consensus is reached and announce this designation to the working group members, and they should be able to challenge the designation of the chair. So, however this consensus call comes out, however the chairs propose to characterize various options, that is subject to challenge by members of the working group. Then it says, if disagreement persists, and I certainly hope it, we don't have a situation where it persists in regard to the category assigned to any particular option, members of the working group may use the process set forth below to challenge the designation. So, and then it describes that challenge process. If several participants disagree with the designation given to a position by the chair or any other consensus call, they may follow these steps sequentially. One, they send an email to the co-chairs, copying the full working group, explaining why they think the decision or designation is an error. If the chairs still disagree, the chairs will forward the appeal to the CO liaisons, that's chartering order liaisons. The chairs would explain our reasoning. And Heather, who's our liaison? Is that Heather Forrest? Mary, might I ask?
For this working group, Phil, the council liaison is Susan Kawaguchi.
Oh, Susan Kawaguchi. Okay, I confused Heather. She's the full. So Susan's a member of the GNSO Council from the BC. So if that occurs, the and the chairs decide to not agree with the challenge, it would go to the liaison, who would then provide a response to the complainants. And if the complainants continue to disagree with the liaison support, they can appeal to the chair of the chartering organization, which in this case would be the chair of the full GNSO, which is Heather Forrest. So there is this process, which I personally hope we never have to engage in. The chairs intend to be fair and objective in their evaluation of the consensus call results. And in the event of any appeal, the chartering organization will attach a statement of the appeal to the working group and or board report and will include all the documentation. So any appeals process of this nature, the entire record would be attached to the final report for the information of the GNSO Council when they consider the final report. I'm going to call on George in a second, but as a segue after we hear from him to discuss the chair's preliminary determination of how we would like to proceed, I want to point out two important things. One, lamentably, in my opinion, in regard to recommendation three, based on everything that's taken place in this working group to date, unless there's a significant shift in people's opinions, none of the options for recommendation three are likely to achieve full consensus or consensus. At best, one of them might achieve strong support but significant opposition, and based on all past precedent, the GNSO Council would not take that recommendation and pass it on for board consideration and approval. So recommendation three, however we come out, is essentially probably dead. It's just not officially dead yet. And second, let me assure you the co-chairs are not going to favor any position of their own, but are going to objectively analyze the feedback we get on all the options. But if anyone on any of them believes that we have incorrectly designated the level of support for any option, there is this official challenge procedure for doing so. And with that, let me stop and call on George.
Okay. George Kourikos with the transcript. Okay, if folks turn to page 9, there's the recommended method for discovering the consensus level. So I just want to look at step number 1, where it says, after the group has discussed an issue long enough for all issues to have been raised, understood, and discussed, the chair or co-chairs make an evaluation of the designation and publish it for the group to review. So my first question is, has that discussion taken place? Like, when is the deadline for all that discussion to have been done? Because, for example, option 6, the final language was just presented today. For Zach's proposal, the final language was just submitted today. If the deadline for all that discussion to have taken place, i.e. the co-chairs are going to make an evaluation, is today, right now, then I've seen, for example, nobody speak out against Zach's recommendation. I've seen nobody speak out against option number 6. I've seen nobody speak out against option that Paul Patterson presented. So, you know, by definition above, those would seem to have full consensus, because when no one in the group speaks against the recommendation in its last readings, if you go back to page 8. So my first question is, when is the deadline for that discussion to take place? And my second question to follow up on that is, if a poll is taken, which is step 4, where we're kind of like deadlocked as to what the proper evaluation should be, all of this discussion is supposed to take place on the mailing list. That seems to be totally apart from totally opposed to the notion that people should be allowed to have anonymous opposition to a position. So if there's going to be any poll, it should be a poll via people submitting their position directly on the mailing list, not using some third-party software where people are anonymous. I'm entirely opposed to people taking a position that's anonymous because it means that they haven't actually discussed their position on the mailing list as a group member. So I don't think people should sit idly by on the mailing list for, you know, 3 years, never state a position. They should be able to argue or articulate their position. And step four says that's a rare case. So I don't know whether we would even get there. We should be able to see the level of consensus by people attaching their name to a position and publishing it on the mailing list. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, George. Let me give my response and then see if Petter has a response, and then we can open this for discussion. Number one, I believe that we've exhausted the discussion of all of these options. The new one from Zach, I don't need any further explanation to understand it. I believe last week I expressed the view that I would not support it personally. I thought it was an abdication of responsibility by this working group. I didn't think it was realistic to think that the RPM working group, with the dozens of issues they have, would give any substantial focus to this IGO issue after we couldn't resolve it in 3.5 years. And third, I think proponents should think carefully. If the full RPM working group takes up the issue of sovereign immunity, of IGO immunity in the context of potential 4K changes. One, I don't know where the 4K changes would go, but it could well turn into a much broader discussion of sovereign immunity in general for not just IGOs, but for governments of agents and agencies of governments who are also users of the UDRP. So I think it would forfeit an opportunity to just decide the IGO issue without getting into a bigger swamp. But having said that, so far as anonymous views, the co-chairs have determined, just as with the initial poll, the final poll is going to be anonymous. We want as many people participating as possible. We don't want people refraining from presenting a view out of concern that they'll be personally criticized by other working group members for taking a particular position. Everything from the poll is going to be public other than the identity of who voted how or who contributed a particular statement, and every member of the working group is free to say this is how I voted, that was my statement, and these are my further views that I wish to have included in the final report. George, consensus calls, I see your thing. It's going to be on the mailing list, but just like we put out the initial poll, that's to make sure that all working group members get it and get receipt of the request for their views, and that no one misses it because they're not on a particular call. The language that the co-chairs may direct that working group participants do not have their name explicitly associated with any full consensus or consensus view position would make no sense if we required every member of the working group to reveal their position on every option in the open email. Does staff want to speak to that? Is my interpretation of that correct? Mary?
Hello, Phil, everyone. This is Mary from staff. And yes, that's right. I think one of the things is that because we are an open participation model, that anyone decides to sign up for a working group, either as a member or as an observer. And if they're a member, of course, they're supposed to participate, but we do not and we cannot essentially dictate their form of participation, whether they choose to be on a call, speak or not speak, be on the mailing list or email or not. So going back to the point about how the consensus call is conducted, what we do is we, as Phil said, we formally announce the opening of the consensus call on the mailing list. Typically, staff sends out quite a few reminders because the consensus call remains open for usually a period of about 2 weeks. So that's distinct from the poll, which is the tool that a chair can use, or in our case, co-chairs can use to help designate consensus, which is their job to do as chairs. So any member of the working group is welcome to continue to discuss on the mailing list. Certainly, the notification of the consensus call, reminders of the date of the closing of the consensus call are all issued to the mailing list. And all this is designed to ensure that there is the ability and the opportunity to fully participate without dictating how a member might choose to do it.
Thank you, Mary. Finally, in terms of what the co-chairs have contemplated going forward, we have 27 minutes left on this call. We have all the options before us now on recommendation 3. There are 6 options, none of which are likely to get full consensus or consensus. I think the meeting next week, next Thursday, should be if working group members feel that additional discussion beyond today's call is required and beyond email list discussion is required of any of these options, I would personally be willing to hold one more call next week, but then our plan was to poll the working group members on the 6 final options for recommendation 3, starting after next week's call after or non-call, that is sending it out just after December 21st, giving working group members several weeks over the holidays to respond to that poll, and then reconvening in probably the second week of January to look at the results of that poll. So far as the poll, the co-chairs feel that the most, since we had the responsibility to initially designate the level of support or opposition for each of the options before the group, is to ask working group members to designate one out of the 6 options as their top choice, and be free to indicate secondary support or opposition to any or all of the other options. And all of that will be shared with the working group at the conclusion of the poll without revealing the names of those members who have voted in a particular way or submitted a particular comment. I see the hands up, but at this point, since I just spoke about a process a co-chair's proposal, I'm going to skip regular order and call my co-chair first to see if he has any further comments as co-chair on the process I just outlined, and if he thinks it's correct as to what we had preliminary determined and what wishes to add any further comments before I call on anyone else. Go ahead, Peter.
Thanks. Well, first of all, I have no corrections to your presentation, and I have more of a couple of general comments on the working order. Yes, we have what we call 3 new options, but at least one of them has been discussed before, and the topic as such has been discussed for a very long time. So I agree that we can actually fit in with, if needed, one more call, but then we are in a position to make a decision. And that was my other comment when it comes to make decisions on on the six options. Frankly, I think we have all done a very extensive, and even if we're not concluded 100% on a specific topic, we have all been involved in a very good way with coming up with a lot of ideas during the years. And that work within our working group must be resulted in a specific position recommendation on our specific topics. And having said that, that would not be any bar to then for any of our working group members take that decision or ideas to other working groups dealing with similar topics and say, look, we decided in this working group on this specific topic, maybe this could be also discussed in this other working group, but not just to pass on our work to say that after all these years we have not come to any conclusion, so it's better than another working group deals with the case. That's I definitely want to see that we can come to some sort of well, even if it's not a majority decision, but some sort of decision that is supported by a decent number of our working groups, that we can actually go out with a result. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Peter. The last comment I'll make before calling on others is to note that in terms of the current makeup of the working group, several months ago we did outreach to all the people who were listed to determine if they were still monitoring the discussion, even if not on the calls, and wish to remain a member of the working group. And we culled the membership of the working group significantly as a result of that, with I forget the number, but a significant number were taken off. So we have trimmed the membership of the working group for this final consensus call. And with that, I'm going to call on Zach.
Thank you so much, Bill. Zach Muskovich, for the record. So I don't want us to gloss over this issue of the rules as set out in the document we have in front of us, and in particular, its specific reference to the point that Phil made, which is that we have to use care not to ensure that polls do not become votes, and that's clearly in there. But so is subsection 4. It says, in a rare case, a chair may decide that the use of polls is reasonable. And so I don't see how we can acknowledge that polls shouldn't become votes, and at the same time constantly have rare cases. So the last poll, which was not a vote, was ostensibly a rare case. I don't know the basis for that. And again, we're contemplating another poll that is not a vote, ostensibly because it's a rare case once again. And so I just would like to hear, if I came forth as a newcomer to this process and proposed something like a binding vote, I'm sure everyone would point out to me that the rules prohibit that and point me to the rules. But as a newcomer, I also hear that we have the rules right in front of us, and there's no explanation about how we've run into a rare case. And to George's point, the rules also seem quite clear that the consensus calls are supposed to occur on the mailing list. And so I'm similarly concerned that the rules speak to this, and yet we've managed to invoke a rare case to get around them. So I look forward to someone explaining to me, A, how this is a rare case, and B, how we're avoiding the language expressed in the rule regarding where the consensus calls.
Zach, might I ask, are you now opposing any polling of the group? I'm trying to understand your position.
Well, it's really not for me to oppose to make the rules, but I'd like them to be followed so I know what I have to abide by or not.
Well, the rules are before you, Zach, and it says in a rare case, the chair, and in this case, co-chairs may decide that the use of polls is reasonable. Some of the reasons, and this is not an exclusive list, when it is some of the reasons, is that it becomes obvious after several iterations it's impossible to arrive at a designation. That's the situation the co-chairs are struggling with, and that's why we're going to use a very limited poll that is not a vote. And unless there was a big surprise, none of these options are going to get approved by the GNSO Council, given the lack of consensus within this working group. Anything further, Zach?
Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, if you don't mind. I appreciate the point you're making, Phil. But, I mean, on what basis have the co-chairs found that it's impossible to arrive at a designation, if that's the exception that you're relying upon?
We've had a lot of further discussion since the original preliminary poll of the group, and we want to it's our responsibility to propose an original designation of support, the level of support for each of the options being put before the working group, and we feel it would be helpful to us to proceed in this way. We have discretion to do so.
And I'll leave it with this last remark, is that the discretion that you have, and which I, of course, respect, and the immense commitment that you better have made and the other working groups of members have made, I respect that. But if it's clear in these guidelines, which are really rules, that there's that it's supposed to be a rare circumstance, and you're not able to clearly express why it's been impossible to arrive at a designation, I feel that there hasn't been a sufficient basis made out for a poll. And it's not necessarily that I'm not in favor of polls, Jim. But we're operating within this framework, apparently. And so I think there needs to be consistency in its application.
Okay. Thank you, Zach. Mary, I see your hand up. Did you want to intervene on this point?
Thanks, Phil, and everyone. So perhaps just some further information that will be helpful. The working group guidelines overall, we take a step back, confers on the co-chairs both the responsibility as well as the authority to make the designations. And in terms of these various steps in the process, the issue that has been under discussion for several months has been the possible scope and direction of recommendation 3. So to the extent that we're talking about these different steps in the process, that has been under discussion for several months. And it is also possible that after this proposed poll, when the results are published, the group may decide that they wish to discuss the designation that the chairs may attribute based on the poll, based on all the discussions that have occurred to date, and based on any other factors that may be relevant. So, you know, it may be that after this poll and further discussion, we have to go back and do something again. The poll doesn't foreclose that. And in terms of using the polls themselves, there is no explicit, you know, prescription or prohibition in the guidelines to say that a poll can only be used at this particular stage. Again, it goes back to the responsibility and the authority of the chairs. So if one looks at this process that this working group has engaged in, especially for the last few months, and noting also that, you know, participation norms and expectations of all members is that they are supposed to follow along, and that's why we publish transcripts and recordings as well. It does seem to staff that at this stage, if Petter and Phil believe that a poll may be helpful to them to discharge that responsibility, it doesn't foreclose further discussion. It doesn't foreclose working group members from continuing to discuss things on the mailing list or specifically indicating their support one way or the other for any option on the mailing list. And all of these will be taken into account by Petter and Phil in making their designation, which again will be shared with the group before being declared finalized. So this is not to say that staff is, you know, wanting to push a particular method. This is a method that the co-chairs have discussed with staff and is being proposed to the group. The working group guidelines apply to all GNSO working groups, and so some groups may choose a certain mechanic, whereas others may decide that a different mechanism may be more helpful. It does go group by group on that basis, and for this particular one, this is a tool that Phil and Petter are choosing to use in their consideration of all the different factors that they will have to consider. Phil, I don't know if that was helpful or not, but hopefully it was.
I think it was helpful, Marion, that it in pointing out that following the poll, there can still be further discussion. It's the purpose of the poll and the outreach to all working group members is to assist the chairs at this point in our process in designating a particular level of consensus for each of the options and then sharing that with the full working group for their review and feedback. So I think it was helpful. George, go ahead.
Okay, George Krikos for the transcript. Yeah, first, once again, I want to reiterate that I'm opposed to the use of a poll as the starting point. I don't think we're in that rare situation yet, and I don't think we've actually discussed the issues long enough to have actually arrived at the ability for the chair, the co-chairs to make that initial designation that's described on page 9, point number little I, Roman numeral I. Roman numeral 1. If the chairs are not going to make that evaluation, that initial evaluation, publish it for the group to review, but are only going to wait until the use of a poll, I think that's the wrong course. The proper course should have been to have discussed it on the mailing list and to see, you know, who is for and who is against all the various positions and be able to arrive at a initial evaluation of the designation of each recommendation that way, because then if there is a poll, is that going to be the final step four, or is a poll just going to be used to inform step one, and then we're back to step two and three, where people are going to iterate saying, you know, we accept that designation or we don't accept that designation, and then how are things going to be decided? Are we going to have like 10 different polls to decide whether things have reached a steady state, because I don't think we're going to achieve that unless we had first had the full discussion on the mailing list. And as I noted before, some of these options have never been voted upon. Like, I don't know how the co-chairs can make an evaluation on Paul Tatterfield's proposal or option number 6 or Zach's proposal when the input of the group hasn't been received. The only opposition I've seen to Zach's proposal is that of the co-chairs. Has anybody else on this participants list that has participated on the call or on the mailing list have actually spoken against them? No. So if you look at the actual definition, then the starting point of the co-chairs has to be that there's a consensus in favor of Zach's proposal. Like, I don't know why we don't use the little voting tools that are in this Adobe chat to, you know, say agree. Do we agree to support Zach's position? Do we agree on George's proposal number 6, we agree on Paul Tatterfield. That should be the starting point. We have all these tools available to us in the live chat room. We should be using them. I noticed Mary saying that not everybody's on the call, but that should be used as a starting point. And then people who are not on the call could be informed that, you know, during the call we had only one or two people speak out against Zach's proposal, only one person speak out against George's proposal. Well, nobody has spoken out against option number 6, but let's assume that there's at least one or two. And then, you know, do people who couldn't, does anybody who couldn't make the call want to voice their support or opposition to a certain proposal? Like, that should have been the procedure. We talk about the rules in terms of a rare case. I don't see how this is some rare case where we're up against a deadline or we're up against a deadlock when we haven't, you know, iterated through steps 1, 2, and 3 yet. So that's my position. I'd like to hear what other people feel about that? Thanks.
Well, I'll say two things, George. One, the co-chairs do not feel they're in a position to make an evaluation of the designation without taking this initial step of polling the working group. And second, can you identify any issue before us that you don't think has been sufficiently discussed for all issues to be raised, understood, and discussed? We've been discussing these issues a long time.
George Krikos here. Option 6 was posted today. Paul Tattersfield's was posted today. Zach's was posted just today. The deadline for those final things, statements, were only posted today.
Right. And I have said that we can have another 90-minute call next week to further discuss that and any other new options before any poll will go out.
Right. But if
I understand Paul's option quite well now without further discussion, but if others want to discuss it, they can.
Right. But if a poll, as Mike Rodenbaugh was saying in the chat room, if you have a poll that doesn't have reasons why people are making such a position on the record, people aren't debating via poll. They're just stating a position. It's like I'm saying something and I'm not responding to feedback. It's not a discussion. It's just a position statement. So that's why polls are something that should be avoided, and the rules say they should be avoided. One of the main reasons is it's not a discussion anymore. It's just, here's my position. I'm not going to react to it. It's set in stone. And we know from past polls that positions are not set in stone. Just last week, Nat Cohen said he supported option C, but no longer supports it. That's something that would happen to other people if they were polled. You know, they have no way, mechanism to update their views. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for that, George. We're at 23 minutes after the hour. I have nothing further to say. What we've discussed will be put out on the working group mailing list to inform the full working group of our thinking at this point, and we'll seek feedback as to whether members want another call next Thursday to have any further discussion of the 6 options now before us for recommendation 3, which all appear likely to be rejected by the GNSO Council, because none in this co-chair's preliminary estimation, without the benefit of the poll, it appears to me that there's significant divisions within the group, and there's not any option which will achieve either full consensus or consensus, that at best there might be strong support but significant opposition for one of them, but that's not even assured. And that's why we'd like to have an informal, non-binding poll to better gauge where things are at. So, Peter, do you have anything further to say at this point?
No, I think that was good summary.
Okay, anybody have anything further to say? Well, if not, thank you for your participation, and we will see if a sufficient number of members of the working group want a call next week for substantive discussion of the recommendation 3 options. Thank you very much.
And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.